The first thing we're greeted by are Brian Jones, the Rolling Stones, which I presume was from her very first assignment on the tour that the Stones did on a boat ride. She was the only photographer allowed on the boat because there wasn't enough room. And this is what we got.
I think that she wrangled her way into that trip by lifting someone else's press pass off a desk or something. I think she intercepted mail somehow and ended up with that pass and was the only photographer on the boat. So.
As we had been told, and we know from reading the press materials, she didn't use flash photography. She did everything by natural light. And as a photographer, I know that creates a whole different scenario.
Yeah, you really have to work with the environment that you're in when you're working without flash, because you're not bringing your own light source. And you can see there's a picture of Keith Richards there. There's a lot of motion in the shot, and I think she just used that motion beautifully to just let that action take place on stage. It's a great shot. And some of the highlights on the guitar are blown out and stuff, but there's just a tremendous sense of momentum in the photograph. And in the picture of Brian Jones, he's sitting in, obviously, inside a boat and stretched out. And it's just a very environmental feeling. You feel almost like you're inside the boat with them.
Now, most of her work is done in black and white, and there's certainly a lot of that. But actually, this color photo is Pete Townsend of The Who with one of his, looks like his windmill guitar crashes.
You're absolutely right. It's Pete Townsend. I didn't notice that. He is doing the windmill, which I don't know what the date is on this photograph, but 1968. So this was at the peak of when The Who was doing this, yeah.
It's at the Fillmore.
Oh, that's right. It's at the Fillmore. Fillmore East? You're right. It's at the Fillmore East. Boy, those were legendary shows. I never got to go to any of them, but 68 was the peak year for the Fillmore, too, I think.
Okay, now we move over to, there's Keith Moon at the top, and then the group shot of The Who, and to the right looks like Ginger Baker and Stevie Winwood.
Yeah, Ginger Baker, it's certainly, that's the Ginger Baker that you read about in the air about. He's sort of leaning on a bar or in a restaurant table with a cigarette in his hand and just looks as burned out and exhausted as you get the feeling that he really was in life. Although I guess if this was, a vintage photograph, I guess he was playing with The Who or the Cream at the time. And I saw Cream in person, and on stage Ginger had so much energy and so much atmosphere. He did those 20-minute solos in Toad that became legendary after a while. And that photograph, he just looks like the antithesis of that. I mean, he's just, it's a great photograph though.
Now, one of the things that is different about this exhibit, from most photo exhibits that you see, is that the writing that Linda McCartney did of the people that she photographed is attached underneath to the placard that describes who she's taking a picture of, and without giving away most of what's there, I mean, they're really personal recollections.
Sure, and she describes him here as an amiable pirate with roguish looks and a strangled Cockney accent, and boy, that describes him perfectly.
We're talking Ginger Baker.
Yeah, I think if you look at that photograph, that's exactly the impression that you get of Ginger Baker. The interesting thing is that Keith Moon, who's now gone, who died many years ago, I guess, looks so youthful in that picture. He looks almost like a kid. He looks like a teenager in that shot.
Well, in point of fact, these pictures are from the 60s, when most of these musicians were in their 20s, were not younger. I mean, Steve Winwood was, I think, 17 when he was playing with Traffic. And this is from the 60s. He was born 1948. So clearly, this wasn't even 19. This picture was taken probably in 60 with the Spencer Davis group, and I think he was about 18.
And if you look closely at this shot, look at the collar. It's got one of those flowered collars that was around from the days of Maud and Carnaby Street. So that's very funny to see that. And you know what's interesting is that Linda wasn't English, so she's looking largely at a whole group of people who are mainly British people. And so she was as much, I think, in awe of this British invasion as we were when we were kids. So.
Okay, as we move farther in, this is like the West Coast section. The Grateful Dead, the Jefferson Airplane, Frank Zappa, and the Doors, and the Association.
Yeah. The Association, it's so funny to see them. I just somehow don't think of them in the same company. They're sitting on this gallery wall right next to a picture of Robbie Krieger and Jim Morrison. And the picture of Morrison is absolutely perfect. It's one of the color concert shots here. And he's just bathed from behind in this red spotlight and from the front in a white spotlight. and he just seems to be looking away from the band off into to another land. I guess he's looking at the audience, but it's a tremendous shot. That's a great concert photograph.
And the shot of Grace Slick and Spencer Dryden, who were one of the an item at the time, is if you've been watching what's been going on VH1 with the history of bands. Grace went through the band, and she was with Dryden at the time.
Yeah, you know, I saw that, and Grace Slick, when you hear her describe her life, it absolutely, there's a bottle of whiskey between them. I think it's Southern Comfort or something, sitting on the windowsill. There's an American flag and a little G.I. Joe in a cop uniform or something. And Grace Slick has this short sort of 60s dress on and a cigarette in her hand. It really is it's a fascinating photograph, and it looks exactly like what you would think Grace Slick to look like. So she really did a very good job at capturing the essence of who a lot of these people were. Just below that to the left here is a picture of Frank Zappa, which is really amazing because she's framed him down in the very bottom right corner of the frame. And there's books and speakers and a balalaika or something on the wall behind him. And Zappa's just staring right into the camera. I assume it's probably a posed shot, but it's a wonderful picture of Zappa.
And we have the Grateful Dead in front of the house in Haight-Ashbury, which I've seen a lot of pictures of that. In fact, last night on the History of Rock and Roll that we were just discussing earlier, the band just hung out on the steps. That's where they were, and in a typical pose.
And, you know, I didn't even recognize that as Garcia sitting in the front of this. This just looks like... that is Garcia in the front, I guess. Yeah, it is. He looks like he's 25 years old, and they do just look like five or six ragtaggy guys sitting on the front steps of a house in Frisco. And how bad I wish I had been out there during those days. But what's amazing is just looking at the range of the people she got access to. This is before she was involved with Paul McCartney, no? Most of it?
Well, she was one of the first rock and roll photographers back in the days when the business was just getting going as a business. And as our friend Harvey Brooks once told me, before all the ugliness got into the music business.
Yeah, absolutely, before, and while there was still an innocence to it, and while this thing was still growing. You got to remember, the Beatles stepped off a plane in February of 1964, I think February 5th or something like that, 1964, and these pictures, a lot of them were shot 4 years later, 3 years later. And the evolution, the growth of rock and roll from the days when the Beatles stepped down that plane to groups like the Grateful Dead taking over Haight-Ashbury is absolutely amazing.
A couple of non-rock and roll pictures, but nevertheless, 60s characters, Twiggy and Michael J. Pollard.
Michael J. Pollard is naked in this shot, just holding up a robe or a coat or something and wearing a cowboy hat. I assume it's a still from a motion picture, but I'm not sure. We'll get over there in a second and look at it, but Michael J. Pollard's always been one of my favorite actors. I think people know him as the guy that ratted out Bonnie and Clyde in the Bonnie and Clyde movie, but you can see that these two pictures are a little more slick than the rest of her pictures, I think, and maybe because they're not rock stars. You know, she took that sort of edge off of the photographs. They're beautiful, though. Nice color shots.
Okay, on the opposite wall, some interesting images here. And smack in the middle, David Crosby, a portrait.
Oh, and David Crosby in his glory days. I mean, he looks relatively healthy. He's got this youthful, tight skin and this beautiful, blissful grin on his face. And it doesn't say, oh, yeah, it was shot in 1967 at the time of Sgt. Pepper. So this was before David started this long decline into drugs and self-destruction, which thankfully now he's come back out of again. But it's she shot him against like a gold wall or a yellow painted wall, and his face is bathed in a very golden glow. And he just has, the only way you could just describe that picture as bliss. Crosby looks like he's just having the time of his life. Of course, he may be stoned, I don't know, from looking at that.
Okay, on the lower left, a picture that looks like it could have been done anytime in the 50s or 60s. Mama Cass Elliot and John Phillips in a dining room area with a black and white TV with the rabbit ears.
Oh, and it's absolutely, you know, it looks almost like a photograph that you would recreate now for some sort of retro ad or something. They're sitting there with this old black and white TV with rabbit ears, and you can see a woman's face on the screen, and Mama Cass has a drink in her hand, and John Phillips just looks sort of almost as lost as he turned out to be, yeah. And it's a very documentary shot. It's not posed at all. She was obviously just hanging out with him and shot that.
And the Youngbloods above that in California someplace, an amazing tree formation.
Oh, absolutely amazing. There's all this like Spanish moss or something dripping off it. And it actually reminds me of Jesse Colin Young's song Ridgetop, So maybe this was actually shot in that area up there where he wrote Ridgetop and where he, I guess, lived, maybe still lives. And the guy in the middle with all the fuzzy hair and stuff was the guy they called Banana. And this was like the epitome of 60s rock combos that got together, and I think it followed after the British invasion. Just a really cool shot, but it looks more like a PR shot in a way.
Okay, as we move over to the right, Tim Buckley and the Young Rascals.
Tim Buckley is just a stunning portrait. He looks like a young Bob Dylan or something, and he looks emaciated and skinny, but healthy, you know, and it's just a really cool shot. Obviously having a conversation with somebody. I don't know if it's with Linda or not, but a very cool shot. And who is that underneath him there?
The Rascals.
Oh, that's the Rascals, huh? That's a group that didn't make it out of the 60s. And their music survived, but I don't think the band did. And in fact, I saw them in Bridgeport, Connecticut at Kennedy Stadium. So.
And it's Dino Danelli and Eddie Bugatti kissing Felix Cavalier.
I guess there's Felix in the middle, I guess. I don't know if the happiness in that band was as good as it looks in that photograph, but they're kissing the guy. They look very happy.
Okay, let's head back into the main area here, if we can get through. There's a whole wall devoted to Hendrix and Joplin, and this is, of course, the picture on the bottom is one of the Lennon McCartney's classic Hendrix pictures.
Yeah, and it's just, boy, it's a profound photograph. It's just Hendrix caught in the spotlight, and it was taken in July of 67, may have actually been taken. Does it say? Oh, it says it was in the Central Park skating rink. You know, he played that year. No, I guess it was a year later he played in Bridgeport. And, you know, he died in 1970. So this was only taken 3 years before he died. So I guess you could consider this the peak of his fame. He's just caught in the spotlight, and his guitar neck and his arm are just parallel. And he looks so into the music. Up above that is a shot in a recording studio. All right, no, I guess it says backstage at the Olympia in London. And, you know, he just looks like the cool Hendrix that you really know. The funny thing is, you know, he died when he was 27 years old. So he died as a kid, basically. He died just a few years out of what most of us would consider college years. And you know, 30 years later is still, I guess, probably considered the greatest guitarist that ever lived.
And, of course, the same could be said of Janis Joplin, who is in three photos right next to him, two color and one black and white.
You know, it's really interesting. I guess the shot up above is Big Brother and the Holding Company, and the shot below is just a tight shot of Janis in concert. And she died at 27, too. So, and it was shot the same year in 1967. So, you know, whether it was Linda McCartney or not, to have somebody photographing these people this intimately at the peak year of this. You know, we just turned around here, and behind us is a picture of Judy Collins, who Crosby, Stills, I guess David Crosby wrote Sweet Judy Blue Eyes for. And she's biting her lip and just looks sort of worried. And you know, you always get the feeling that Judy was on the outside of rock and roll looking in a way, because she was really a folkie, you know. And that picture sort of captures a semi, I think, sort of either contemplative or anxious look. And Dylan below, if you saw this photograph, you wouldn't recognize it.
Looks like David Bromberg.
It looks a lot like David Bromberg, and it doesn't look like somebody that you would expect would be the poet of our generation there. But he's just sitting there with reading glasses on, and he actually looks like Arlo Guthrie a little bit, too, in that shot. And I think that's a platinum print, by the way.
All right. We're going to come back to the wall that's going to attract the most attention of this entire exhibit when we can get to it. But we'll go to the... I guess we'll call it the R&B side of the room.
Yeah, there's just a great portrait of Ray Charles here. I haven't read the information yet, so I don't know where it was shot, but I think it was a recording studio probably. And if you look closely at the dark glasses he's wearing, the keyboard is reflected in his glasses. And, you know, Ray Charles led a hard life, too. He was a heroin addict for part of his life, and he just managed somehow to recoup and come out of this, you know. But... yeah, it was shot during a shoot for Mademoiselle magazine, actually, on models and musicians. It was done in Los Angeles, so. To the right of that, it's just a terrific shot of B.B. King. And again, she used motion in this shot. She used a sort of slow shutter speed. And, you know, this was back in the days. This was, the year is not on there, but it's a platinum print. It's a gorgeous shot. It was, I think it was shot in Central Park with Jimi Hendrix, I guess. It's a terrific shot, and there's little highlights that are flicking off the guitar and stuff that ended up on BB's face, and a dramatic shot. I mean, this was like obviously peak of B.B. King and above.
But you can tell, even with the distortion, who it is.
Oh, absolutely, you can tell. And in fact, he's got this sort of screaming, painful look on his face that really, he's sort of is a character of himself now, but that's the real thing back in the mid-60s. And in fact, I saw him at about that time. He opened for the Rolling Stones at Madison Square Garden in the Let It Bleed tour. And that's about the way he looked. Above him, though, is somebody I never saw, and it's Otis Redding. And, you know, he died in 1967, and this shot was probably made that year. And, again, he was in Central Park. She must have spent a lot of time in New York in shooting these outdoor concerts.
Well, she was based in New York, living there still. And, of course, not too much before that, I guess, was his actual breakthrough debut at the Monterey Pop Festival, which was the first time most wide audiences had heard him, because he had been on the Southern Circuit, and not heard by most wide audiences.
You know, at the very bottom of this, I'm going to read you a quote here from Lyndon McCartney. He says, "He was a hero of mine. To me, he was and still is the king. He was the epitome of real soul music, and to name my favorite singer, I would have to say Otis Redding." Very interesting that she named Otis Redding and not her husband.
Aretha.
And Aretha, boy, Aretha looks so young in that shot with the big, the Supremes hairdo and the fluffy dress. It's just obviously a candid shot, and it's a beautiful platinum print. It's gorgeous.
Okay, now this is the let's go here first. This is a shot of Arlo Guthrie somewhere in New York or elsewhere, in a typical '60s environment for Arlo, in clothes that don't match.
Yeah, and they're in a red environment. The building behind him has been painted red. The stairwell in front of him is painted red. He's wearing red pants. The models are wearing red clothes, red socks, red skirt. And I think she was sort of leaning toward an Annie Leibovitz kind of look there. She was trying to come up with sort of a conceptual shot.
But this was before Annie Leibovitz was known.
Absolutely. Probably before Annie Leibovitz was shooting. And Arlo looks like he's 15 years old in this shot. So.
He was probably about 18.
Yeah, yeah. And behind us is sort of the sacred corner of the exhibit. There's about seven pictures of McCartney behind us. And God, when you see these prints in person, it's really a whole.
Okay, in the corner is the cover of McCartney's first solo album, which was issued in 1970, as the Beatles were going their separate ways. But a photo of a horse and then a crowd shot, and I'll let you describe it.
The photograph of the horse, it says she completed her last exhibition of photographs entitled Wide Open, which opened shortly after her death in New York's, in the Bonnie Benubi Gallery. And it's a very unusual photograph, I guess. It's just a horse on a British landscape. And it's a platinum print. It's absolutely gorgeous. I don't know if Linda made these platinum prints herself or if somebody else made them. But it says in the copy that goes along with this, she experimented with a lot of things, from Polaroid transfers to platinum printing. So maybe she did make this print. It's a really exquisite landscape photograph. You would never nail it as a Linda McCartney shot.
And these are from that 1970 period. I recall seeing some of these shots around the time the publicity of the McCartney solo album came out, and these were all taken in England, Scotland.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting is the shot from the cover of the album that you remember. That's the shot on the left here, I guess, right?
Yeah, with their daughter Mary inside Paul's coat.
He looks happy and proud. He's got a very fatherly sort of look, and it's more of a family photograph. Actually looks like my brother a little bit in that shot. And the other three shots, he has a really sort of apprehensive look. He looks, almost ill at ease with the camera, and I don't know if that's some affectation that he put on for the camera, if he's really that ill at ease. But even the one where he's got the baby, he's lying naked on a couch or something, he's got the baby in his lap, he doesn't look incredibly comfortable with the fact that he's having his picture taken. Maybe it's because he's naked, I don't know.
All right, as we move to the wall, which is really for historic purposes, these are the inside pictures of the Beatles.
And you know, the first picture that I'm looking at here is a picture of John and Yoko. And the first thing that struck me about this is what a really warm, inviting shot this is. This doesn't show any of the animosity or the uncomfortableness that you read about when you hear about John and Yoko. It says, taken at a meeting with the New York manager, Alan Klein, after the death of the Beatles manager, Brian Epstein. So maybe there was like sort of genuine sympathy going around between the band. Yoko later told me that unfortunately the transparency of an earlier shot that they had given her got stolen from their home along with a number of other things. But so there must have been some genuine friendship between them at some point. Some, you know, there's a picture just below that of John Lennon and Paul McCartney sitting there talking, and my guess is, without even reading any of the information here, it says John and Paul were still the greatest of friends, but now they had the weight of the world on their shoulders, and it was during the photo shoot for Abbey Road. Do you know if Abbey Road cover was shot by Linda? Is that?
I don't know. I would have to think maybe it would be here if it was, but I haven't looked on the album photo credits, and back then I wasn't looking to see who was shooting the pictures.
There's another photograph just to the right of this one of John and Paul. The one of John and Paul is stunning. It's a vertical shot of John sitting there in a white suit smoking a cigarette and obviously having a nice conversation, probably wondering where it all went wrong. But if you look to the right of that, there's a photograph of all four Beatles, and Paul McCartney almost looks like he's wondering what's next. He sort of looks divorced from the situation, and above that is a really interesting image. It was obviously shot with a really wide-angle lens from very close because there's a lot of distortion and there's almost like a curvature. There is a curvature to the photograph there, and it's the four Beatles with Yoko Ono sitting in front of John Lennon, and you can almost feel the polarization in that band in that shot.
Well, the photo on the bottom that you described is looking you could tell the band was breaking up. Linda calls that four strangers.
Oh, is that right? Well, you know, I didn't see that, but I would have to say that that's exactly what it is. And Paul sort of has a look on his face at that moment like, who are these people? I don't know these people. It's a fascinating photograph. But what's really interesting to me is just to the right of that, there's a beautiful, a gorgeous platinum shot of John, which is obviously just a very candid, available light shot. I don't know if it says where it was shot, but it says in retrospect, it's strange to think that back in 1965, John was my favorite Beatle. And it almost has that sort of fan quality of somebody that snuck in backstage and got a picture. Up above that is a picture of John and Paul working together on a song. They're both laughing, and they have a notebook. They're obviously working out a song or something in a studio. There's a little a sentence from Linda here. It says, I love these two pictures that I took of Paul and John during the Abbey Road sessions because they show the closeness they shared. So.
And these are studio shots in production with George Martin that is sort of square in the middle of this wall.
You know what's funny about looking at the shots here is that George Martin looks so like he's still caught in the beginning of the Beatles. He's still caught in 1964 or something. And obviously, and the equipment around him, if you could see this equipment, is very primitive recording studio equipment.
This is when they were working on the White Album.
Yeah, and this is the White Album. It's like an 8-track board. You know, I'm sure they're working on it. You know, musicians are using 128 tracks or something now, but they're working on an 8 or a 16-track board. And it's Ringo and Paul McCartney and George Martin just sitting there working. And it's the kind of picture that we all sort of wondered, what do the Beatles do backstage? What do they do in the recording studio? And until the anthology stuff came around, we really didn't have much of an idea. There wasn't that much information. So I don't know how many of these photographs she published during these years, but she certainly had a wealth of stuff. There's a shot in the corner, though, over here of all four Beatles. Let's go over and see if we can find out when that was shot.
It was taken in 1967 at the press launch of Sgt. Pepper.
Oh, okay. Well, they sort of have that Sgt. Pepper's look. You know, this was the beginning of I think, the album that was about to lock them in as the greatest rock band ever. And so I don't think they could have been any higher at this time than they were at the release of this album. And if you've read anything about recording this album, it was no picnic to get to. It was a very long, drawn-out, anxious project for them.
In part because that equipment that we made reference to was all they had to work with.
Yeah, exactly. And they were trying overdubbing techniques and complex recording techniques on equipment that wasn't meant to do that. So there was a lot of... I think people should go back and listen to that album now and see how funky that album is based on the recording equipment that they had. But in that photograph, they look almost relieved that it's over. They're all laughing and smiling and sort of like, eh, that's it. You know, just to the right of that, too, we were talking about Janis before, and there's another portrait of her. And she almost looks worried to death in that shot. It's a very very telling picture of Janis, and it's black and white. You know, in all the color pictures of Janis, she looks much younger and youthful. In the black and white platinum print, she sort of has a that hard Texas look to her. That, and she was just this babe from Texas, you know.
Okay, that's pretty much the entire exhibit. There's 50 photos, and there's a lot here. I mean, we went through it fairly quickly, and the insight that Jeff has is amazing. To just looking at these images, overall, your impressions?
I would say that, first of all, the first thing that strikes me is that Bruce Museum did a superb job of hanging this show. This is a really classy, well-done show. The prints are obviously beautiful, so whoever organized getting the prints framed and hung just did a superb job. The selection of prints is absolutely extraordinary, and I think for anybody that didn't live at this era to come in and see these portraits, they will have a whole new interpretation of what the 60s was like. And for those of us who lived through it, it's like revisiting old friends in their heydays. And I think this is going to make a lot of people want to go out and buy a copy of a Linda McCartney book, because these photographs are just tremendous.
Well, the other thing that they've done here at the Bruce Museum is in the gift shop, they've got, of course, the Linda McCartney book, but they've got a bunch of other 60s-related and Beatles-related materials, Hendrix books, Rolling Stones books, and it's kind of interesting that it's you know, in Greenwich, you're going to come to see the 60s show and all this rock and roll stuff.
Oh, it's a strange thing to be in Greenwich and to be in the neighborhood we're in looking at these photographs. It's very strange. But you know, one thing I'll say, and this is the truth, when you look at these photographs, I think you see the photographer. You can see that they were all made by one hand. And I think that's the mark of a really fine, fine photographer. And in a way, it's almost a shame that she was Paul McCartney's wife, because a lot of people affiliate her with having this access to rock stars and stuff that really she built herself. She didn't even know McCartney when she started to do these things. You know, she snuck her way onto that Rolling Stones boat trip, and she built her own career based on talent and based on her ability to take photographs and take stunning photographs. And I really do think you see a lot of the photographer, and you know, you could feel her in this room. You can feel the photographer present. It's just a shame that she's not here to see this.